Periodically Productions presents Fairy Tales for Unwanted Children.
On the Field by Scott Thrower. Once upon a time, there was a general standing alone by a fire on the eve of a great defeat. His army had fought gallantly through the day. His archers shot pure and true, his cavalry routed the enemy on three separate occasions, and his swordsmen distinguished themselves through bravery. They'd done better than he had any right to ask. But even so, as they settled into the darkening night, each side caring for their wounded and falling into exhaustion, there was no doubt in the old man's mind about what the morning would bring. They were simply too few, while the enemy was many. They did not hold the superior terrain. Most of their siege weaponry was beyond repair, and the tattered remnants of morale stretched between the scattered campfires was bound to snap by light of day as sober men woke for battle and saw the situation as it was. The general had a son, a bright boy and by all rights a man. He'd spent the day by his father's side holding a flag tall overhead and watching the battle with a horrified fascination. He'd grown up hearing stories of battle, tales of brave women with shining swords and strapping men with feats of strength. His father's memories swam in the boy's mind, developing a sheen of beauty to match the wonder of his father's words. The otherworldly glamour of success in desperate situations. The near wins that left the boy too excited to sleep on rainy nights. The moments too fantastic to believe. And yet they came from his father, so they must be true. But the boy had to admit that reality was something different as he walked back to his father, having set the horses off to graze. War was exhaustion on the field, knights too tired to raise their swords against the enemy, and a swirling chaos of smoke where friend and foe became impossible to tell apart. There was no dignity in death, just the stench of blood and bile and sewage, the ragged screams of dying men left behind in the mud, the frailty of the human body, torn wounds that would fester instead of healing. The boy was both convinced he'd never sleep again while also catching himself nodding off on his feet. He was waiting for his father to turn towards him, with a smile upon his lips and twinkle in his eye, ready with a plan to turn the whole thing around with a surprise that the boy would describe to his own son one day while tucking him into bed. But his father was not going to turn around because there was no plan, no hope, no clever trick. The day was lost and there was nothing left but endings. As the fire burned low, the general heard his son step forward and felt the boy's hand upon his shoulder. "So is it to be surrender?" The boy's voice, so recently deepened, was whisper quiet. The general reached up to hold his son's hand, something he hadn't done in years. "Sometimes," the old man said gently, "a man has to fight even when he knows he will lose. There are times in this world when things go against you even when you're in the right, and sometimes you have to save yourself to fight another day." The general's voice gave out, and it was a long moment before he could continue. "And sometimes there is no other day. But you still have to raise your sword and stand your ground, hope the world understands why you do it, and die on the field." The general turned, kissed the back of his boy's hand, patted his cheek and stepped away without meeting his eyes, stopping just at the entrance to his tent. "I don't expect you to stay," he continued. "I don't even expect you to understand, but if you were still here in the morning, we'll both find our graves tomorrow. I just want you to know the cause is just and demands it, though it is your right to disagree, and somehow I hope you do." And then the general disappeared into his tent to spend a sleepless night thinking about whatever old men do in their final hours. The boy stood by the fading fire, looking out at the flickering lights of the army. Last night they'd spread far, like all the stars in the sky fallen to ground, vast and unfathomable. There had been such a certainty there in the songs they sang, the laughter in the night. He hadn't seen the thin line of tension so carefully concealed. the weariness that left them laughing a bit too loudly and singing a verse too many. He saw it now, followed it back through days and weeks, wondering when they'd known the cause was lost, and why they'd decided to stay. Tonight was silent, save for the distant cry of a man still dying, like an animal in the woods caught in a trap. The boy couldn't pretend to know why his father was so convinced that fighting was the only way, or understand why there were any fires at all. If any of the soldiers were slipping away in the night, the boy saw no signs of it. But he could understand that dying man's cry because he wasn't ready to die yet either. There'd be scouts in the hills, and he'd likely be caught. He could hide in the mountains, but he might never go home. The enemy was going to sweep through, and home was just going to drown in it. He could feign being dead, but he'd find his throat slit just to be certain, or trampled by horses. In truth, the boy could only see one way to survive. He left behind his livery, his hallmarks of his family, the ring that bore their sigil, and when morning came, he stumbled towards the enemy army in scavenged clothes, heavy with another man's blood, and they surged past him without seeing, because he looked like one of their own. Truthfully, he thought they looked very much the same once you were close. A horde of soldiers and knights, farmers and kids. Their colors were different, but the fear was the same, the tense lines around the mouths, the panic in the eyes. The boy was tossed by the weight of them, carried back the way he'd come. An older man, fat and slow, picked up a bent sword from the mud and pressed it into the boy's hands, pushing him forward. And so the boy turned, armed and at war, thrust back towards his own people. They crashed together like ocean waves, tossed and wild, loud and frothed. Metal against armor was louder up close, and the boy felt small in the crush, seeing nothing but shoulders and swords, a spray of red and stink of sweat. He barely kept hold of his bent blade, trying for nothing more than air and space. The cut came as a surprise, because he didn't remember it happening. One moment he was screaming, pushing in a direction he hoped was forward. And the next, his stomach spilled out into his hands and there was nothing left to do but fall. It seemed he listened for a very long time, but it was like a conversation from downstairs after being tucked away in bed. There was no reason to rise, and the world seemed so far away. So the boy floated there for quite some time until a voice called him back. "Boy," it said, deep and wet, a voice from a forgotten place. "Come with me. I'll take you somewhere deeper than the roots of the mountains where rain can never reach." The boy opened his eyes, finding a creature standing not far away. Angles and jagged shapes against the moonlit sky, branches that tangled together into the shape of a man. The boy lay in a field, new grass over broken soil, the scent of wildflowers on the breeze, the rusty edge of a bent sword caught in the pale light beside him. He sat up, finding himself back in his livery with no aches in his arms or blood to be seen. He laughed, climbing to his feet, wondering over such a bizarre place to lay, and the creature reached out a hand that was not branches at all, but roots, gnarled and twisted as if they'd grown through rocky soil. "But why, creature?" the boy asked. "Why should I go with you when I must find my father? He'll be waiting for me, and I have a story to tell, and when I have told it, he'll tell one too." He felt fear, but it was distant, like the throb of an aching back, and nothing compared to the terror of a battlefield. Was this creature death? He'd heard tales of a little girl who'd led you away, but he'd never given it much consideration. There had been so many years left for that sort of thinking. The creature pulled back its hand sadly.
"Your father's gone on, boy. His fight is done, and there is nothing that remains for you here."
The voice creaked like an elder oak in a windstorm, ancient and strong. What else could he be, the boy asked himself. But he hesitated to reach out a hand. "But who won?" the boy asked. "Not just this battle, but the greater war. I know the odds were against us, but history is full of unexpected twists, and why should this not be one of them?" The creature crouched down, showing a tangled web of roots and soil that must have been a face lost in the moonlight.
If a man grew sick half a world away, in a room you've never seen, on a street you've never been, on the corner of a map you've never held in your hands, would that matter to you?
Yes, of course. The boy wasn't as certain as his words, but he wanted them to be true.
And yet it has happened countless times. Every hour of every day you have walked the world, and it has never made a difference to your life.
It was not accusing or angry, just a statement of fact, and the idea left the boy sad for a moment, but just the one. "Except now I know about this sick man, so it has changed something," he said. The creature stayed very still, its head falling as if disappointed, as if the boy had just given the wrong answer. A breeze across the grassy field filled the night with wildflowers and caused the creature to creak.
"And yet," the creature continued finally, "you know nothing about what comes next. So why don't you take my hand? I do know, so should you not assume that I have come to you for a reason?"
This was confusing as well, because the boy could not know what that reason might be, just as he really hadn't understood why his father would fight. To do anything, to know anything, he'd have to take someone at their word. But why should it be this creature? Again, the boy almost reached out a hand, ready to be led away. And again he hesitated. "I don't know you," the boy said. "And I cannot go with you until I do, because I don't know where that path will take me. I think now I need to understand things before I proceed, as the stakes seem high and I don't think I yet grasp them." Again the creature seemed disappointed, and again the breeze rose up across the field, this time carrying a cloud across the moon and concealing the world in darkness. When it passed, the creature was gone, and the boy felt the small hand of death slip into his own, cool and soft. He looked down at her and felt no fear, watching as she stared at where the creature had been.
Come with me, she said. "Your father is waiting, and there is much to do."
"What was that?" he asked. "That thing, it nearly took me. What was it?" Death pulled at his hand, leading him away, off to another adventure.
I don't know,
she said, from deep within her hood, her hand holding tight so that he could not slip away even if he had the want.
"But I'm going to find out."
Did you find a moral for this week's story? Let us know on Twitter at PeriodicallyPod, or join the Fairy Tales for Unwanted discussion group on Facebook. For more Fairy Tales for Unwanted Children, join us at unwantedchildren.ca.